The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 10th of January, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. Very busy this week, Chris. And he covers trading updates from Tesco, Marks & Spencer, Debenhams and Halfords. Plus, I also have on my old mate, Nicola Duke, and she's charting some of the most popular sort of cryptocurrencies, including Bitcoin, Tron, and Chainlink. I say most popular, the ones she sees are a bit more bullish, well, obviously the granddaddy of Bitcoin, but Chain and Tron are above the 200-day moving average. You can see the charts on the blog post, by the way. I also have, as usual, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and also a list of the top five most liked RNSs. And you can see top 10 versions of these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Want to know which companies are about to list on the London Stock Exchange? To see an up-to-date list of all the new and upcoming London IPOs, please visit voxmarkets.co.uk/IPO-watch.
And joining me on the podcast right now is founder of FinancialOrbit.com. That's Chris Bailey. You all right, Chris?
Very good, thanks, Justin. Very good.
Yeah, we've got a raft of sort of news. They're coming out from the big retailers here. And first on the list, I suppose, is Tesco's, isn't it? It looked quite good, didn't it, Christmas?
Well, yeah, Tesco's looked all right. I mean, sort of everything, every little bit helps, I guess. And you look at the Tesco's sort of numbers and performance, and, you know, they are grinding it out. 2% like-for-like sales growth over Christmas. You know, that's pretty good. You know, yesterday, Sainsbury's were talking about a small reduction. You know, Tesco's has done a pretty decent job. When I looked into the numbers, they were taking market share across the board. They were getting better customer polling numbers on things like quality and sort of other sort of nice perceptions about the shopping experience. And I think most importantly, the Booker deal, Booker's was that wholesale business they bought in the last year or so, has bedded down really well. So you look at it overall, Tesco's is okay. You know, Dave Lewis, how did he describe it again? He talked about it as a bang on track sort of trading period. And, you know, you've got to say, that's as good as it gets in UK retail 2018-2019. You know, bang on track means the Tesco's turnaround plan to ultimately return themselves to something a bit more like, you know, the sort of the retail behemoth they were of a few years back is still pushing forward. I wasn't surprised to see the shares respond positively. I think this is a step forward.
Yeah. Do you know what? I was just looking at Aldi and Lidl are continuing to do well, aren't they? So it's good that the Tesco's are even in that, because I read here that 2/3 of UK shoppers visited an Aldi or Lidl over Christmas. Their combined market share is now, I think, bigger than Morrison's, I think. Looking at it. So they're doing very well, aren't they?
Yeah, they are, and you know, but the thing is, that doesn't mean there isn't growth around for other people, because the basic sort of model is this. Aldi and Lidl are growing at the moment around about 10%. However, the reason why people like Tesco's and Morrison's, who also reported earlier in the week, the reason why they're still growing their sales is because, A, of course, the overall market is still growing a little bit. Yeah. But B, all of the independents are the ones getting squeezed. So if you look at the data, you know, the big four, you know, Tesco's, Morrison's, Asda, Sainsbury's, Lidl and Aldi, so that's a big six now, they're taking massive market share out of the independents. So the market is, to use a fancy phrase, oligopolizing. And of course, it will concentrate even further when Asda and Sainsbury's get together. So for me, for Tesco's as the market leader, they're looking at that thinking, fewer people to sort of compete against. You know, we know that convenience is a big growth area. We're squeezing out all the independents. There are are angles there for us to exploit, so long as we can get customers coming into our stores. And that's why I think this polling data they talk about today, about how things like the value perception or the general shopping experience perception of Tesco's, that's the key to their turnaround. And they've been doing a good job on that over the last year or two. That's why, personally, I own Tesco shares and why I think they're going a little bit higher.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think Dave there has done very well, has he, Dave Lewis?
I think Tesco Dave's done a good job. I think Morrison's Dave has also, I don't know, must be something about Dave and being sort of CEO of supermarket. Perhaps that's where Sainsbury's is going wrong. You know, Mike needs to become Dave or something. Who knows? But I think Tesco Dave's done a good job. I see the shares back 240, 250p. There's a bit of resistance on the chart. Hit that level a couple of times over the last little while. I think that's where it's going back to. I would be a buyer here.
I would say that someone's been, several people have been knowing about this Tesco's Decent Christmas for a while, because they're 190s seems to be a support level, but in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 trading days, they've had, in fact, 6, they've had 4 days up and 3 days down. So, and obviously, it's bounced a lot from 190 to 214 in the last 5 days. So obviously, someone's known. How do they know that? How do they know they've done well over Christmas?
Well, you see, I think it's because it all started with Next. You know, you go back now, it seems ages ago now, does it? But probably just a week ago, Next came out with their numbers and they were a bit better than expected. You know, full price sales were good. They sort of just ever so mildly tweaked the profit guidance, cash flow generation, dividends and all of that gubbins was good. So from that, people have said, hang on, we know that November was tough, but Next said December was a bit better. Who else might have an okay December? And since then, we've had Dunelm basically saying they had a good December. Tesco's today saying they had a good December. My goodness, even retail dogs like Debenhams, even they said, look, December was all right in the wider scheme of things. So I think just people got themselves a bit in a bit of a fuzz. Late December, markets were all over the place. People got a bit too pessimistic. And now we're seeing the reality, which is not easy. You know, every one of these retailers are talking about competition, you know, difficult conditions, inevitably the Brexit uncertainty and stuff like that. So it's not easy, but it's not completely unworkable. We still have to eat. We still have to buy clothes sometimes, et cetera, et cetera. So the better retailers are still finding a way to sort of make it work. And obviously, the sector's not exactly expensive. I mean, it's been 1,001 headlines over the last year about retail apocalypse and everything. So we shall see. But all I see is that the strong are going to get stronger. And my gut feel will be the Next of this world, the Tescos of this world, are probably going to be a bit better positioned this time next year than they currently are. And as a consequence, if we avoid sort of apocalypse on various other fronts, political and economic and whatever, there's a story there to be told.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's look at another one that's facing challenges as well, is Marks and Spencer's. What do they look like?
Yeah, well, M&S, I mean, it's the perennial turnaround boy, isn't it? I think actually they've got a good management team there now. I've really got big respect for Archie Norman, the chairman, who older listeners will remember successfully sold Asda to Walmart many, many years ago. Mm. You look at the numbers today for M&S, they weren't stellar. I mean, 2.2% reduction in UK like-for-like sales isn't good. And you know, you look at food, clothing and home, they were all down. However, M&S, the story really is about changing the business. They've decided that it's not about volume, it's not about trying to sell as much as they can, it's about selling at higher margins in the areas that they're good at. So no surprises, the sales are declining there, but they've again reiterated their full year forecast. So they're not profit warning. They're saying basically that they've got this transformation program rolling along quite nicely and they're optimistic about the future, which obviously includes fewer stores and focusing much more on what they perceive as their strengths. So overall, it's a sort of a holder statement, this one from them. It's one which sort of says, look, the plan's still on track. We're not changing our medium-term numbers, but it's a big year for M&S. Can they really get this transformation plan kind of kicking forward? And if they can, my guess is there's probably a bit of value in the shares. I think if I was I'd be a buyer of Tesco's today. I think M&S is sort of the one where if you've got a very good medium-term view on the UK economy and M&S turnaround plan, then it is cheap. But my feeling is for sort of widows and orphans or those of a slightly shorter term nature, M&S is not where you'd be putting your money today. You'd be sort of still watching and waiting. Mm-hmm. But today's statement is another step along that road of some semblance of a plan which has a bit of credibility, finally, to sort of turn this one a bit more positive. My observation is it needs to clear 300 pence on the share price chart basis. If it does that, then I think, you know, we can start saying that maybe the bottom is in. But until that point, you know, it's still a hope stock, basically.
Yeah, well, at least, you know, Marks and Tesco's have ticked up today. I mean, one that's not faring so well is Debenhams, that they've down 11%. And I'm just, part of me is thinking, how long is this going to take before we see it and finally give up? You know, because it's been struggling massively, hasn't it? And even today, it was down I think 5.7% like for likes, and this is on top of a year that's been very bad for them anyway, which has seen their market share, well, their share price just collapse. I'm just wondering, is there writing on the wall here? Do you think, or what? What do you think?
Yeah, no. I think, look, there's two things with Debenhams that struck me from today's numbers. Number one was what you've already observed, that they're still having like-for-like sales decline. So it was a bit better in the Christmas run-up period. I think they were minus 3% over that, but it clearly was not good. However, what they did say, they've got a kind of a motivated newish CEO in there to try to get them into shape. What he said was, look, we're generating cash, which is very important mm-hmm. for them, because, of course, the big issue with Debenhams is the debt. You know, yeah. If Debenhams had no debt, then you'd say, well, you know, it's not easy, but they would survive. But the debt is the killer. I still think the money's on ultimately one of those clever debt for equity swaps, i.e. where shareholders sort of get either wiped out completely or a majority of their shares go and the bondholders come in to take control of the company. I still would say that's the most likely scenario. But, you know, they're still trading. They're still giving it a go. But I think the share price tells you everything. It's one for absolute gamblers. Personally, I wouldn't touch it. And when I go shopping there, am I excited? Do I think it's a must have? It's a must look at? I don't think so. It feels like a store which you wouldn't create today.
Yeah, yeah. Any other companies reporting?
Well, we've got to talk about Halfords for a second. I mean, Halfords shares were down 20-odd% last I looked. Obviously, well known for their motor retail, auto centres, cycling and everything else. You know, a business which has struggled in recent years. It's gone through a few different changes of management. They've had a couple of whoopsies already, and today's is yet another one. I mean, a pretty shabby Christmas trading update. They blamed the weather, which I always find a little bit, you know, for a business like Halfords, should it really impact them that much? They're saying it impacted some of their motor businesses, I guess, people sort of getting ready for winter and all of that stuff didn't work as well. So a big profit warning, because they pulled the numbers back and they said that even the 2020 numbers were not going to show any improvement as they spent money basically to transform and change the business. So again, it's another retailer that's struggling in the e-commerce differentiated retail world. I think what's interesting here, though, there's one thing that is interesting, and that is Halfords have got a new CEO. He's from Dixon's Carphone. He joined, get this, a year ago, and he's trying to sort of put his plan into shape. And the reality is that it may still work. You know, they reiterated the dividend, which is now 5% plus. The debt is quite low at Halfords. My personal view would be he's absolutely kitchen sinked it in order to sort of basically form a base from which to work on later on, you know, this year. My feeling would be wait on this one. I don't own it. I think we've talked before on it, and I said, look, avoid it like the plague. But my feeling is at this price, nearer 200 pence, you go back on the long-term charts, kind of interesting in 2012 that the share bounced off of this sort of level. My feeling would be keep an eye on this one. I think the update, I think they've got full year numbers in May, and at that point we'll get a better idea, or in the interim period of the plan, and just maybe there is a recovery play on this one at some point in 2019. I don't own it yet, but I'm going to be now monitoring it a bit more closely, because it strikes me that just maybe with low debt, high dividend, low valuation, everybody hates it, maybe there's an angle here. Who knows?
Yeah, down. Well, worse reaction than Devlin. Of course, Devlin's had a massive hit anyway, but down 15%. Yeah, almost like one of the wheels has come off there, it looks like. But like you
that's
say, it's £2. You know, that seems about the support level. If it hovers around there, that's good support.
So. That's right. I think that's right. And I think you go back to that 2012-13 period, that's where it bounced off, you know, basically £2 and change. So kind of interesting. It's piqued my interest a little bit. I put it on my watch list now. Maybe I'll find myself. I think I want to see more numbers on this. So, you know, again, a trading update only tells you so much. They'll have some more numbers in upcoming months. And from that basis, I'll make a sort of a view. But it's certainly on my watch list now to be monitoring.
Yeah, but do you know what's interesting? There's a retail motoring sales was down the biggest, 3.4%. But the group online sales, which represents 20% of total sales now, grew by 7.5%, with over 80% of Halfords.com orders being collected in the store. So that's a bit of a bright light there, isn't it? Because, I mean, that's gross, 20%,
isn't
it? Is. So, yeah.
That's right. No, and, you know, any retailer now obviously has a decent e-commerce aspect. The trouble is, of course, you've got to then morph your physical retail estate. How do you change that? Because maybe you find you've got too much space now. You don't need as much. You need more warehousing space in order to fulfill internet e-commerce sales. You know, that's part of the transformation challenge. So, you know, I think for Halfords, that's one of the issues, transforming the business to make it right-sized for 2019 or the 2020s. If you like, that's the challenge. But is there a potential persistence to the story there? Absolutely. You know, there is a sort of an element. The auto centres are good, and they traded all right actually over the period. So it's on my watch list. £2 seems a kind of an interesting level, I would say.
Yeah. Do you ever look at personally? Do you ever look at sort of funds or ETFs, Chris?
I back in the annals of time, one of my first jobs was actually looking at things like that. Mm-hmm. But today, and I think thematically, my excitement would be in today's active investment world. I think individual securities, the breadth and volatility and options there are just so exciting in 2019 that for me personally, I'll be spending all my time looking at individual stocks.
Yeah. And that's the way I sort of started, by looking at funds first, and then as get a bit more confident with, you know, reading sort of RNSs and breaking down numbers, you start to go to individual stocks, and of course there's more exposure, more leverage, and more upside, but obviously more potential downside. But I just wondered, but at the moment I'm just looking around with the market where it is. I'm sitting, you know, I've got a bit of cash and I'm looking, where can I deploy this a little bit? I want something like I was even looking at things like the an ETF for Argentina, because I know it's sort of, you know, it's about the kitchen sink through it, but it's a recovery play in that, or anything really. I mean, even China, some of the worst performing funds this year has been China. I think that's going to be like that for another year, maybe. But I mean, you know, I think longer term, it may, you know, a bit of bounce, because they can stimulate, can't they, you know?
They can. No, the Chinese have some scope to do that. There's no doubt about that. And they're, if you like, their business cycles are at a different point from, let's say, the States. But to me, which country, if I had to sort of say which country has the most potential uplift versus current perceptions, it would be much closer to home. It would be the UK. And if it wasn't the UK, it would be Europe. You know, both are wholly disliked. Both have a myriad of very, if you like, obvious issues. But as anything, that, as always, that's potentially priced into, to some extent, into share prices. So for me, actually, as a global investor, you know, I invest money and have done for many years in the States, in Asia, and whatever else. Actually, today, what I'm most excited about, weirdly, is the UK and Europe. Who'd have thought?
Yeah. Well, I think, we said yesterday, it's odd that, you know, UK is doing okay, but Germany is slowing down. So anyway, Chris, thanks for that, fella, and we'll catch up next week.
Sounds a plan. See you then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is the Queen of the Chart, the lady, the Queen of Crypto. It's Nicola Duke. You're right, Nick. Happy New Year.
Hello. Happy New Year.
We haven't managed to hook up for a long time. You know, our schedules have been out of sync and we try to hook up several times. It hasn't worked out. But I thought we'd catch up and look at, you know, go into your niche field, your specialist field, Nick, Bitcoin. Because I know it's at a horrendous time, hasn't it? For what, since 2018, pretty much, the start of 2018. It's bounced, but it's grinded lower. And so what's happening? Bitcoin, what's the thoughts, Nick? You've got the inside track. You're in lots of forums and communities of this, and you chat to people about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. What's the thought? Are people still long-term bullish generally on the crypto scene?
Yes, I think yes, believers are definitely long-term bullish Bitcoin. Bitcoin is big daddy for a reason. You know, when you think about it, you know, it's not just about first name advantage, but it really is the big daddy. It overshadows all of the other alternatives. They're called alts for a reason, mm-hmm. just because they're alts to Bitcoin. And yeah, it really is the one. And no, absolutely, it's not all over. You know, Bitcoin has a lot of problems. The biggest one is scalability, and it's what most people are working on to make Bitcoin bigger. And by that I mean, Bitcoin needs to work faster in order to be adopted by more people and to become a payment system that really everyone could use. At the moment, it's too slow. So most of the work that's done on Bitcoin is to make it go faster. And once it can, I think it'll take off. And I don't believe that we're that far away from it either. You know, it'll take time, but maybe not that long.
Really? But how long have people been saying this for? Because it's been a while now, isn't it? People have been, you know, going for a rally. And it did drop below that sort of, I suppose, 6,000 level.
Yeah. Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And, you know, but now we've done five waves in most impulse moves. You know, that's five waves. I think that there's room. At the moment, Bitcoin is sitting on a weekly 200 moving average. And we've been bouncing on it for 6 weeks and held above it. And so, whereas before at 6,000, we really didn't have a reason to find support there. There wasn't any kind of big structural support or moving average or reason. This time, we are sitting on an important weekly moving average and important support. I'm not going to rule out one more push lower that washes out the last of the bulls. And when the last one's given up, which I think will either be somewhere around 3,000 or maybe outside sort of 2,400, 2,375, I'm a massive buyer there. I worry that actually it's one of those levels where we'll go down to and it'll be quite hard to buy there. Mm-hmm. But then I think we'll find a bottom.
Because, you know what, I've never seen anything as frenzied as this since the dot-com boom. I mean, there were people, there was conventions. Honestly, genuinely, people selling houses, remortgaging their houses, thinking they're going to be multimillionaires. And these are frenzied followers of this. And there are people who have been burnt in this. It was going to the moon. And there's different camps, aren't there? There's one that still believe it's going to $100,000 Bitcoin. And there's another camp saying it's going to naught or nothing, you know? And they probably sit somewhere in between. But
I think you have to believe that Bitcoin will become a valid payment system. Mm. And if Bitcoin becomes a valid payment system because of the way it's structured, there is only so many. So there will be at some point a shortage. It's not like fiat money where you can just print more. You can't do that with Bitcoin. And so if it works as a store of value and a means of paying people for more people, then it will increase in value. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the people that piled in were just piling in because it was going up, really.
Yeah, weren't they? Absolutely. Nothing. I mean, that happens in everything. It's like with stocks and shares. It's odd. You've got to flip your mentality completely. It's like, you know, if something's got crazy, just following it, people just buying into it. With the stocks and shares, you know, the company gets more expensive and then the valuation gets stretched. That's the way you should look at it, you know? Whereas people think if it's going up, there's a certain amount of momentum, of course, and phenomenal momentum with Bitcoin. But you know, with companies, if the fundamentals are good, and I don't know how you value, this is the trouble. The trouble is here, is that, you know, it's with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, it's hard to value them. I don't know how to value them. You know, no one does, really. So
exactly.
That's the problem, is how far can they fall? Because there's no underlying capital.
I also think that they're years ahead of these time. For most of these, like Bitcoin, we know what it's going to be used for. It's going to be a payment system. But a lot of these altcoins, people ICOs, they're complete scams. People have written really vague ideas, outlines on white papers, and raised phenomenal amounts of money against it. But they really have nothing. They have no team. They're light years away from getting anything built. But they've got everybody in on the hype and excited. And it feels like that dot-com time. You remember in the dot-com when people said, oh, I'm going to make a site of maps and we can get our maps online. And everybody, oh, well, that's great. I'll buy it. And of course, you know, they were 10 years away from getting there. Yeah. Now we think it's normal. People said, oh, we're going to buy your pet food online. And at the time, you know, everybody went, yeah, of course we will. And of course, we were 10 years away from doing that. And now we do. Yeah. But and so pets.com died. And all of these ones, you know, I remember website ideas for by paying your parking tickets online, and people threw money at it. Well, it never happened. They never had the team. They, you know, they just had a great idea and people threw money at it when there was nothing there to back it up or make it work. And that's exactly where we are with these ICOs. People are going, oh, we can make blockchain, use blockchain to do this and that. And is it a good idea? So, yeah, a lot of them are really great ideas, but they don't have anything. They don't have the people or the knowledge to put it together or make it happen. And so we shouldn't throw people, but people are throwing money at it because they think it sounds like it could be a really good idea. Mm-hmm. And so an awful lot of money has gone in, and these will come to nothing. They will come. Most of these ICOs need to go away and die, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It is the thing, isn't it? I think when everyone or most people give up hope, that's when you'll start to rally. So you reckon Bitcoin, you know, it could be stabilizing around here.
So, you know what? I think Bitcoin here, you know, the signs of stability around the 200 weekly moving average, the fact that we haven't come all the way back, the fact that it is Big Daddy. And yeah, I do think, is it going to be a survivor? Yes. I'm not 100%. If Bitcoin were to rally back above 4,400 and hold there for a week, I think that we've probably put a bottom in and it's a long-term buy. If it can't, I think that we're still, that's kind of where our resistance is. If it can't, then I think we'll see one swing lower to around 2,375, and I'm a buyer there, definitely.
Okay, well, name another sort of coin you're looking at.
And that sort of 2,300, we should rally back to 10,000.
Okay.
See, I'm not going to say we're going to the moon or we're going to 50,000, but we should rally back to that 10,000 number.
Okay.
And so now I'm going to talk about, now remember, my analysis is based on technical analysis, not on fundamentals. So I'm not going to lecture people about the fundamentals.
That's the thing. It's ideal for Chartists because it's all about technicals. Yes, there's no fundamentals. Do you know what? I did tweet out today and I stick by this. I said, with small cap stocks, right? Technical analysis, I look at both. I look at charts, I look at fundamental analysis. But with small cap stocks, I don't rely on just tech alone because it relies on positive or predictive news flow. And with small cap stocks, news flow isn't predictive. It's like things that come out all the time that's unexpected. And that smashes the technical, you know, a nice technical setup gets smashed every time if the wrong kind of news comes out. And that's what happens a lot in small cap stocks. So you need to look at both. I do regard highly, you know, just looking at a chart for support and resistance and maybe, you know, a relative high, relative low.
Because it helps you manage your risk.
Well, yeah. And if if a stock's been overbought and it's really flying, I will step back and say, I'm not going to buy there. I'm going to wait for it cools down a bit because I know it will cool down. So they are handy. But I think in a predictive nature of small cap stocks using tech, it's hard. But with you know, altcoins, like say, in all those cryptocurrencies, it's not because there's no fundamental analysis. There's nothing you can really base it on. You can't value it in some way. So you've got to look at the chart. So what's next then? What's next here?
Okay, so now, because we're using technical analysis, and so we're relying on groupthink, so we're relying on a lot of other people. If we're going to use technical analysis, we're relying on a lot of other people doing the research and thinking that this is a good coin or token because that's why it's going up. And so we're going to look at two, and we're going to keep it really simple. We're going to look at two that are trading above their 200-day moving averages, and out there in all of these altcoins where they've been completely smashed and are down 90%, there are a couple of little gems. The first one we're going to look at is TRX, and we're going to look at it on a chart against the US dollar. We're not going to look at it against Bitcoin, because some of them can look artificially good if you're pricing them against Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's been so beaten down.
Yeah.
And so the first one is TRX. Now,
Tron.
Yeah. TRON. And if we look at it against the US dollar, we can see that 3 days ago we broke above the 200-day moving average, and we broke out from an inverted head and shoulders pattern. So we're pulling back hard today, much like the whole of crypto space is pulling back. But this one, at that 200-day moving average and at that head and shoulders neckline, has a really good support level potentially where we could see a run higher. So I think Tron, if we see support around 0.0238, that's a really nice buy to continue higher. And if we do in this one, we need to see a daily close above 0.0323, but then my target is 0.558.
Okay, all right. Cool,
so Tron, TRX, US dollar. If you look at it as on a chart against Bitcoin, it looks fantastic. But remember, Bitcoin's been really beaten up. So take a look at it against the dollar, and you will see that it looks quite good.
Yeah, no, I can see that. TRX, USD, if you're looking on TradingView.
Yeah.
Marvellous. What's next?
So the second one we're going to look at is Link, L-I-N-K, which is Chainlink. Yeah. And we're going to look at that against the US dollar as well. If you are looking for the chart, look at it maybe.
So why would people look against the Bitcoin anyway? I know you have to sort of sometimes...
Because when it's traded, for most exchanges,
the currency is
Bitcoin, or always used to be. More and more are allowing you to trade between fiat and US dollar. But those exchanges, they have to do the whole know your customer thing, whereas before, any old Joe could buy Bitcoin and then trade against all of those other altcoins.
Marvellous stuff. All right, well, tell us about this then.
Okay, so if we take a look at Chainlink, this is not 100%, but if we look at this one, this is another one that has rallied really nicely and is holding above all of the daily moving averages, the 20, the 200, and the 50. This one broke above its 200-day moving average about 2 weeks ago. We're pulling back today in a kind of an ABC correction, I think, but there's really good support for Link at the lows here today where we are now, which is at 0.364 here around here. And so I'm looking to see if Link can hold this support here today and rally from here. And if it can, I think it's another really interesting buy for a run back to the highs around 0.59 or 0.6. So we're at 0.36 and our target is 0.6. So almost, 50% return on this one as well.
Yeah. And you must have heard some awful stories of late, haven't you?
Awful.
I mean, what is the most silly thing you've heard someone do as far as... Because I think wherever you invest in, no matter what you are, you have to manage your risk and exposure. And that's the number one rule. And in fact, I did a series of videos on investing in small cap stocks, lessons I've learned. And to me, number one rule is never overexpose yourself. It's the old adage, don't invest where you can't afford to lose.
Right.
But there are people just going nuts, aren't there?
Well, the problem is that people didn't invest what they could afford to lose. Initially, I think there was this HODL mentality. It's called HODL, hold,
yeah.
Hold the lie, HODL mentality in crypto. Because in the long bull market, even in the crappiest of coins, you could just buy it and it could go down 90%, but eventually it would go to the moon and it would give you 1,000% return. And so people got this HODL mentality. Now, well, that was fine in the beginning when people weren't risking money that they needed to live on. The problem is when the mania set in, people were selling stuff,
mm-hmm.
like their houses to buy and invest. And that's where it all went wrong. Because when we topped out in this, people didn't take profits. When we were at 20,000, everyone was telling us, in Bitcoin, everyone was saying, oh, we can go to 50,000, and it was too, the mania, really. And people bought too late, risked money that they couldn't afford, and this HODL mentality. So it's so important to learn a trend strategy, a trend following strategy, and manage your risk. And even if you just use percentages, if it comes back more than X percent, I'm going to get out and wait and then buy it cheaper. Like, you have to manage your risk.
It all comes down to maths. You can be a good investor just by looking at maths, just by looking at numbers, figures, and all that. And you don't have to look. You do, you know what? Even investing in companies, you do not have to look, right? at what they do. If you just look at, for example, growth, cash generated, if it's all going up and nice dividend, they can pay the, if you put it on a spreadsheet and it all works out the figures, you just invest. You can invest in that and apply the mask for risk. Don't overexpose yourself. And the trouble is, that HODL phrase was coined by a guy who was drunk trying to write hold, wasn't he? And so the whole concept of it was, came from the brains of a man who was addled through drink. And that's really odd. You know, it's not a good setup, really. If you're talking about a learned guy who studied for years and he was as sober as day and he came up with that theory, but he wasn't a guy trying to write the word hold when he was drunk. It's nuts. So that's the basis for that sort of investment technique or strategy. Comes from a guy who's had too much to drink, ridiculous. Anyway, Nick, thanks. Can you send me some charts on that?
And I'll send you some charts that will accompany this podcast and people can take a look.
Marvellous stuff. They think. And speak soon, Nick. Cheers.
Okay, bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Rockrose Energy. At four, Union Jack Oil. At three, Fresnillo. At two, Habibo. And at one, Anglo-African Oil and Gas, AOG. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Infrastrata, exercise of warrants and changed TVR, total voting rights. At four, Angus Energy, operations update, financing, GM requisition. At three, Havivo, positive data for Phase 2B Flu V Challenge study. At two, Petromatad, operational update. And number one, most liked RNS, came from i3 Energy. That's an operational and funding update today. And they're up by about 14%. And hopefully we'll get the guys on very soon. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.